No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So please join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype us at BBS Radio 1. No guests tonight, so I'm going to be on my own here because I also have no Kathleen. She's somewhere over America on her way back to Arizona on an airplane. So please call in and help me out so I don't have to talk by myself for an hour. Let's hear from you and get your questions on anything that we've talked about on our show, border security, statehood, what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri, the president's recent maneuvers on immigration, Bill Cosby. We're going to talk about all these things and more. So you call and I'll listen. And then you won't have to hear me talk incessantly for an hour. But before we get started with the show tonight, I'd first like to recap what's going on at statehood in the District of Columbia. We still have 130 co-sponsors on our statehood bill, so not much has happened in either the Senate or the House this week. As everybody knows, they've been tied up with the immigration reform package and other things that we'll talk about later. There has been some new legislation passed locally, however, which has really been a terrible blow to our delegation. The mayor and the chairman of the city council have just put themselves in charge of a commission that will dole out very little money to our delegation and require us to submit plans and go through an audit that we have to pay for and hire a person to administer for us, which will also get paid even though we don't get paid. It puts us under boards and commissions, and this is a terrible place to put us. We're not commissioners. We're elected officials, just like other United States senators. And this is really an attempt to control us. So it hasn't been a good week for our delegation, and we're fighting it tooth and nail to see what we can do about changing it. But unfortunately, the legislation was passed unanimously, which makes me suspicious of which as if there's suspicious to whether there's anybody on the city council in favor of statehood for the District of Columbia. They all talk about it, but then when it comes to actually doing something about it, they seem not to do anything at all. And in fact, this latest maneuver is really cynical because it's based on an old commission that was put together at the time our delegation was created. But back when the commission was created, we were supposed to be funded for over $1 million. That in today's dollars would be somewhere around $2.5 to $3 million. But yet this legislation only gives us about $200,000 to split three ways and allows us to pay up to $100,000 to the person that administers it, which would leave only $100,000 subject to the control of the mayor and the chairman of the city council, who have appointed themselves co-chairs of the commission, and also it requires us to submit plans and pay for an audit every year. It's just a ridiculous piece of legislation which steps on our delegation and will make it harder for us to do what we were elected to do. I asked the mayor personally to veto the legislation, but which he had considered for a while, probably not because of that provision, but because of other provisions in the legislation, which it would affect his transition, but he chose not to do it. So we're stuck with this piece of legislation, and we will carry on and try to work within these new constraints, although it will be harder. So if you're out there and you believe in statehood and you live in the District of Columbia, make sure you call Phil Mendelson at the Wilson Building this week and tell him that you think this legislation is a mistake and that he should fund the delegation. I don't have the number right off the top of my head, but I will come up with it by the end of the show. And you can call him and tell him that you believe that the legislation is inappropriate and that they need to fully fund the delegation. You know, there's legislation out there which would provide the delegation with enough money to pay a stipend to each member of the delegation, which should be done, and also pay for staff and give us money for programming. And that's what we need to do. We can't change the way America has done business for the past 213 years without some resources. We really need to get some money and some support from the people who are elected in the District of Columbia if we're going to get this done. And, you know, I just ran a citywide campaign, and I came in third out of 15 candidates, one out of the money, the first two win. Excuse me, I unfortunately came in third, but my message was that we need to become a state and that we need to have someone on the city council who believes in statehood. And I think that message resonated, and that's why I did so well. I had no money, no endorsements, hardly any support, and I still managed to come in at the very top of the list because people in the District of Columbia are tired of having the government interfere in everything they do. They're tired of not having a voice in their own legislature. They understand that the country was built on the principle that you cannot tax people and not represent them, and they want this to change. But the message doesn't seem to be getting across to the city council. So we need to get that message to them. And you can actually call the, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, you can call the mayor's call center at 311 and ask for Phil Mendelson's office. That makes it nice and easy for you. All you have to do if you live in the District of Columbia is dial 311 and ask to be transferred to Chairman Mendelson's office and tell him to fund the delegation. Stop playing around. Let's get this thing done. So that's where we stand on statehood right now. That's my wrap up. We're still pushing. Of course, it's not going to happen in this Congress, but there were a group of activists that had a lobby day in the Senate just last week. And we also all went up to the Hill, myself included, in the House to ask them to stay away from our budget, which we do every year, and lobbied for that to happen last week. So we're still pushing hard on the issues that are important to Washingtonians. And even though our legislation won't get through in this Congress, there'll be another Congress in 2 years and another Congress 2 years after that. So our hope is if we can get enough co-sponsors in this Congress, that in the next Congress, when the bill is reintroduced, which it will be, by our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, that we will be able to amass more co-sponsors, and that when we finally get a House and Senate that are more amenable towards granting us our equal rights, that we'll be in a position to actually make it happen, because we will have built up enough support by then. Of course, again, city council, if you're out there, some of the support depends on us having the resources to actually pursue a strategy that will make that happen. So let's put some money into the fight if we really want to become a state, and let's get people motivated to stand behind us. If you're out there, please call in and let us know that you support what we're doing. It really helps a lot to know that there are people out there that care about this issue and that want to make it happen. Well, while we're on the issue of statehood, let's move on to what's going on here in the District of Columbia today. Today's a very sad day in the District of Columbia. It's connected to our statehood movement, and that is we found out today that longtime councilman and mayor for life, Marion Barry, passed away this morning at United Medical Center. He had suffered from many ailments over the years, had a transplant about 5 years ago, was a diabetic and had other problems, and had been in poor health. The drugs that he was on to help him with the accept the new organ made him susceptible to infection, and he spent a couple of terms in the hospital, a couple of stays, long-term stays in the hospital over the past 6 months, and was admitted the other day and succumbed right after midnight. And our condolences go out to the mayor's family and his friends, of which he has thousands in the District of Columbia, and especially to his son, Christopher, to whom he was very close. The mayor was 78 years old, and he had done a lot in Washington. His statistics alone are pretty outstanding. He spent four terms as our mayor, and he was in the middle of his third most recent term as a councilman from Ward 8. He was on the original city council after being elected to the Board of Education in the district, which was the only elected office in the district for many years. We didn't have home rule until 40 years ago. It's hard to believe, but we were controlled by a committee of Congress up until then. We had many different forms of government, from commissioners to people that were appointed by the federal government to the federal government itself. And as you know, we're still controlled by the, ultimately controlled by the federal government. But 40 years ago, thanks to people like Marion Barry, we were granted home rule. And Barry was one of the first councilmen, served as a councilman, then was elected mayor, then was actually in 1990 in 1992, I'm sorry, he was convicted on a drug charge, which everybody remembers, and he was sent to do a 6 month prison term. When he returned, he was reelected. Most people were amazed at that, but he was reelected. And in 1995, he again suffered another setback when the Congress moved in and appointed a control board to take over the District of Columbia because we were in financially bad shape. And he ended up being really in charge of the rec department and libraries and a few other minor things in the city, but the control board ran everything else. But he came back from that and was reelected and reelected as a council member from Ward 8, the poorest ward of the city. And actually, right now, as we speak, there's a vigil going on in Anacostia, a candlelight vigil that started at 6 o'clock at his house in Anacostia and moved to the big chair. In Anacostia, if you're not from Washington, you might not know this, but in Anacostia, we have a landmark, which is a big chair. It's just a dining room chair. I don't know how big it is. It's like I don't know, 20 or 30 feet tall. It's just a gigantic dining room chair, and it's there in the middle of Anacostia where a furniture company was for years. They put that up as a promotional piece, and when the furniture company was torn down, the chair was left. So it's become kind of a gathering place in the district for special events, and it certainly is a landmark which everybody recognizes in Anacostia. So people have marched there. There's a big parking lot behind it, and they've marched down to the big chair from Marion Barry's house and a candlelight vigil to pay tribute to him. And although we remember all those things about him, the drug charges, how long the federal government pursued him and tried to get him in a sting operation, we don't remember nationally, I believe, a lot of the good things that he did. Here in Washington, we do remember the good things he did, and I think that we should reflect a moment on some of those. A lot of people don't know that he was a well-educated, brilliant man. He dropped out of a PhD program to join the civil rights movement with Dr. King. But up till that point, he was pursuing a PhD in chemistry from Fisk University, and he received a master's degree in chemistry from Fisk. So he was a well-educated man, and he was also very dedicated to the civil rights movement. In fact, he came to Washington as the president of SNCC, the first national president of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And if you don't know what SNCC is, they were one of the more effective and militant groups that came out of the civil rights movement, did things like sit-ins and were part of the march across the Pettus Bridge. And they're very, very effective. And Marion came to Washington as a great civil rights leader and as the national chairman of that group. And he loved the city and he stayed. He came so far in his life that it was just, that it's just amazing to me. He started out as the son of a sharecropper in, he started out as a sharecropper in Mississippi and rose to be mayor of the most powerful city in the world. And I think that's just amazing in itself. We have a couple of callers. Are you there, caller? We have a caller on line one.
I'm Bonnie, yeah.
Hey, Bonnie.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, and you?
I'm fine. Do you have a comment or question, or you just want to tell me I'm wonderful?
Well, I'll do that in a bit. But, you know, I just wanted to say that was a nice tribute to Marion Barry.
Well, you know, he's a great guy. A lot of people don't know this. And just on a personal note, let me just share some personal stuff with you, and that is that ever since I was elected, he was always supportive of me. We've had our political differences. I actually asked him to endorse me in the last election, and he endorsed another candidate, but he called me up and had a very frank discussion with me. This was just less than a month ago, about 3 weeks ago, called me up, and we sat down and we talked for a long time about the election and what he thought and what his aspirations were, and he decided to go with another candidate. But he was always upfront with me, and he was always very kind to me on the council, treated me with great respect, and supported, you know, I started out the show by railing against what the city council is doing to us, but he was actually a supporter of the legislation to pay us and to give us funding, and has generally been supportive of us. So on a personal level, I'll miss him for that. And he did a lot for the people of Washington. You know, he started a summer jobs program that a lot of people criticized because they said it was make ready work and it was it wasn't particularly productive and it was poorly run. But the truth of the matter is that you cannot go through the streets of Washington go to a social gathering without meeting somebody that got their first job through that jobs program. As I campaigned, I can't tell you how many literally hundreds of people said to me, I had my first job through Marion Barry Summer Jobs Program. So he did that, and we could use another better summer jobs program for our kids today. There are so many that are unemployed. And he opened the door for African-Americans in city government. You know, we were a majority African-American city, but we didn't have any African Americans in city government. So he opened up jobs for African Americans in city government and actually opened the city a lot to people. So he's a great local hero. And I think that nationally, a lot of people don't understand that. And I've got to tell you, he's also an international hero. I mean, this has been all over the internet today, and there's been calls from foreign countries and condolences from foreign countries over this. And when I was in Charlotte recently, 2 years ago for the Democratic convention, all that anybody wanted to do when they found out we were from Washington was meet Marion Barry. Everybody asked to meet him. So what's your impression of him? You're a Washingtonian, right?
Yes, I am. Well, I was disappointed in all the things that he did when I first moved here, which was 26 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that after he was a troubled man,
He had many, many personal struggles.
Right. And that he was able to get beyond that and still live a full life and not hurt anybody. He helped himself a bit, but I think he was probably a good man. I mean, especially with his work on civil rights and all.
Yeah.
I was at a function, I don't know, a year and a half or 2 years ago, that was at the War Memorial, which I can't remember what it was for. But I know that he got up to speak, and the band started playing. And it was just kind of a funny little quip here. But he stopped and got the band to stop playing so that he could speak. And it was one of those things that was on schedule. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do. And you know, more than anything, as a politician, you had to admire that about him, that he always was in command, you know, and that's exactly what happened. We were given speeches. It was for a statehood rally at the War Memorial, and the speeches were running over. So they did to him what they always do at the Academy Awards, you know, when you speak, the band starts to play, but he wouldn't tolerate it. He shut the band down. Shut him up. Yeah, because he could do that. He had that kind of command. But in addition to having that kind of command, he was also, he never lost his common touch. I mean, when you're out campaigning in Ward 8, which I've done a lot of lately, I mean, everybody knows him. Everybody speaks highly of him. He never lost that common touch. There are a lot of people that are angry with him for the things he did, the things that you've mentioned. And there are people, African-Americans, who were angry, who thought that, you know, he did a disservice to the city and to its African-American population. And there's certainly something that you have to say for that. We were the crack. Crack was ruining our city. We were the murder capital of the world, or at least the United States, when all this went down. But in the end, he did so many positive things as well that I think that he's a man to be admired. He was a member of the school board, a city councilman, the mayor, an activist, and he was the son of a Mississippi sharecropper who educated himself. Yeah, I mean, imagine. So he came so far. Well, thanks for your comments.
It's really hard to imagine.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's really not where you start in life, but where you finish. And he finished pretty much on top. He's just got a book that's just been released. I went to the book signing the other day, and you wouldn't believe how many people turned out to hug him and tell him how important he was. A lot of people love this book.
And, you know, I was reading something in the paper today, which is totally off kilter, but it's, you know, a lot of people that are younger that live in this city, because we've got all those people moving into the district all the time, and most of them are younger than you and I are, but they probably don't know anything about the civil rights movement or anything that he was involved in. And, The thing that I read, I mean, just an interesting little fact, is that right now, 10,000 people a day are turning 65. And a lot of them live here.
Holy crap. Well, we better start
using
the metro and stop driving around town with all these old crazy people out on the road. Well, thanks for calling.
I thought that was an amazing fact.
Yeah, it really is. And a lot of them don't know that Marion Barry. They only know the Marion Barry that is projected in the media. And it's not always a good image. There's been a lot of rancor today and upset people here in Washington because TMZ ran the headline, crack mayor dies at 78, you know, and people thought that was terribly disrespectful. And I agree, it's disrespectful.
It is disrespectful.
And that's the way some people know him, and that really doesn't do justice to the man that he really was. He was an amazing man, and D.C. will miss him. And on top of all of this, he was one of the people that started the modern statehood movement in the District of Columbia. So we always look to him as a mentor. Well, we've got a caller on line two, so I'm going to let you go, Bonnie, but thanks for calling in, and we hope you call
in again soon.
All right, bye. Caller two, are you there?
I'm here. This is Anise. How you doing, Senator Brown?
Hey, thanks, Anise. Thanks for hanging in with us. Are you at the vigil for Mayor Barry? Did you
go
to that?
No, that's over. I tried to get there. I was actually in Virginia when I heard about it, so I'm in the Southeast now. On my way to the Congress Heights School for the screening of the Oprah, his appearance on Oprah.
Yeah, I really wanted to go to that, but I missed the vigil. Me too, because of this show. But let me ask you, you knew Marion Barry. You worked with Marion Barry. He'd been a member of the movement that you've been a member of for so many years. Tell us what you think all this means to our movement for statehood.
Well, you know... and I'm on the bus, so I know you're hearing all kind of more noises, but he was an icon. I mean, a lot of people don't understand. This man was a civil rights icon with flaws. And everyone has flaws. He was a human being. He was sent from the 60s civil rights movement. He was called up by the first executive secretary of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, who I also worked with, Dr. James Foreman, brought Marion Barry up to D.C. to start the Free D.C. Movement, which was a movement for economic and citizenship equality. He thought enough of Marion Barry to ask him to come up to start this movement in the nation's capital. And he was extremely respected, extremely successful, extremely brilliant. I have not heard one person, whether they liked Marion Barry or not, say that he was not a brilliant motivator, mobilizer. He was also an educator. He was head of his PhD in chemistry. Yeah. He was an extraordinary person. And I think it's really disparaging to people to say that they respected him and held him so highly and for nothing. People don't do that.
That's absolutely true. I mean, all those things you said are true. And you know, just on a personal note, I was amazed at him as a politician because he always had that common touch. And you're right, he was always educating and you know, I saw him when you would see him in a public forum, he commanded the audience, just like our last caller said. He had it all going on, as we say. But he never lost his common touch. He never forgot where he came from. And that was one of the most amazing things about him, I think.
That's right. And he came to D.C. when black people were not given any access to the resources that were here. We were run by a racist House committee on the district. McMillan.
Yeah.
He was fighting a home rule. D.C. could not even vote for president until a constitutional amendment. I mean, it was extraordinary. It's extraordinary. And a lot of the development that you see in D.C., particularly downtown on Pennsylvania Avenue, was the result of Marion Barry's plan. A lot
yes.
of people don't realize that. A lot of people, black and white, benefited from his program.
Absolutely. And I have to tell you, just coming off a citywide campaign, I said this before, but it's absolutely true. You go across the city and you talk to people and you see so many people that are in their 40s and 50s who are professionals working in the city who got their first job through Marion Barry's summer jobs
right.
program. And I mean, people say it to you over and over and over again. Seriously accomplished people and people, just regular man on the street types. All sorts of people were
well, he had a program where abandoned homes were auctioned so that people could become homeowners for the first time. Also, mm-hmm. he had a program so that these homes could be repaired. He was really trying to equalize the access to resources in the nation's capital, and the fact that there were so many African Americans who were not able to share in that until he became mayor. But as I say, everyone benefited, black and white. And I really had a great deal of respect for him. We weren't the closest friends, you know, but I admired him. And our organization, Stand Up for Democracy, uses the motto, Free D.C.
Yeah.
Statehood Now. It's based on Marion Barry's Free D.C. movement. Absolutely.
Well, he's always been a great supporter, and he has done so much for so many people, and people that live here, I think, really realize that. His celebrity, unfortunately, came through some of his misdeeds, and people outside the district remember that more than they remember the good things he did. But we need to remember the good things he did because there were so many of them, and he changed so many lives. So, well, thank you for calling in. We'll just, you and I and a handful of others will carry on, and we'll try to finish the work that he started. Really, he helped start the modern movement for statehood, and I know you know that, and I certainly know that, and I want America to know that.
Well, you're on your way to helping us complete that legacy, so thank you so much for the program.
Well, thank you. And have a safe trip home on the bus. And thanks for calling in. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. You too. Thanks, Anise. We're going to take a short break now before we come back and we talk about some other issues. But here's one. I thought of so many songs that we could have played to honor Marion Barry, but this was the only one that really seemed appropriate to me, given his life and his legacy. So we're going to have I don't know what version we dug up, whether we dug up Joan Baez or we dug up the Morehouse Men's Choir, but here, this goes out to Marion Barry and to his friends and family and all the Washingtonians that loved him so much. Be back in a few minutes. Rest in peace, Marion Barry, son of a Mississippi sharecropper who grew up to be the mayor of the world's most powerful city. Job well done. Any of you out there that want to know more about the life of Marion Barry, he's just published a book called Mayor for Life. You can get it on Amazon or at your local bookstore. It's probably, I haven't read it. I was given a copy of the book signing. I haven't gotten around to reading it yet, but I'm sure it's a fascinating story because this is a man who had a fascinating life. Moving on from Marion Barry, we have a few other things we'd like to talk about that are in the news this week. And one of them, of course, is Bill Cosby. And the reason I want to mention Bill Cosby is I think that there's a segue here between, you know, what we just talked about, the great life of Marion Barry, and another great man who has fallen on hard times. We now have 16 women who have charged that Cosby sexually assaulted them. We recently, yesterday, had an ex-NBC employee, Frank Scotti, who was one of his personal staff, say he paid many women off for Cosby. And many of those women said they were drugged. You know, that is in almost every jurisdiction, I think, considered rape. I know that several of the women, that's exactly what they've charged him with. And if you're out there and you have a feeling about this story, I wish you'd call in so we can talk about it, because I really want to know, you know, what's our culpability as people in this situation, as people that worship these people, that put them up on a pedestal, when we find out that they're not perfect, there seems to be a, you know, frenzied feeding. And that's what's going on with Bill Cosby right now. And I remember that this is what went on with Marion Barry when he was caught in the hotel room on the video smoking crack with you know, after they tried to get him on so many occasions. And isn't part of the problem that we expect these people to be perfect, and they're not, and they're human? I'm not excusing what Cosby did. Don't get me wrong. He should be prosecuted. If he raped those women, I know the statute of limitations on some of this stuff is passed, and that some of these women have settled with him financially and otherwise. But if there's anything that he's culpable of, and any crime that he can be prosecuted for, I think he should be fully prosecuted. We can't tolerate this kind of behavior, obviously. But my question is more, you know, do we forget the things that this man has done? He changed the image of Black Americans on TV. You know, he changed them from the step and fetch it's and the maids and the people that were, you know, always in the background, to he was a spy, he was a doctor, he was a family man. He changed that image across America. He was also an educator. And again, you know, we talked about Barry and his education. Well, Cosby had a PhD in education, an EED, and used it. He went to Temple University in Philadelphia, and he was very often an advocate for better education for people, and did a lot of philanthropic work. In fact, I was an organization that I'm involved with, the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, which provides funding for historically Black colleges and universities. Cosby was the at their fundraiser last year, was the master of ceremonies, because he believes in education for everybody. So he's done a lot of good things. And how do we reconcile that, the good stuff, with the bad stuff? That's a real problem for me. And I don't know if you're out there and you have any insight into that. Please let me know. Please call in and say something, because we'd love to talk to, I'd love to talk to you about it. And moving on from that, and like I say, if there's anybody out there with some insight, please let us know. Another big story this week, beyond the Bill Cosby story, was the immigration story. I believe that what the president has done is he's drawn a line in the sand. and he's challenging Congress to act. And if nothing else, he's created a lot of controversy. For the first time in a while on the immigration debate, it seems that the conversation has restarted. It was deadlocked, and I know there's all these people out there. I love these Tea Party Republicans who are saying that he's violating the Constitution, that he's trying to act as a potentate and create laws and do all these things that he's really not trying to do at all. What he's trying to do, and I think it should be pretty obvious, is he's trying to get Congress to move. And the reason that he has to act in the way he's acting is because we have no comprehensive immigration policy. There is no comprehensive immigration policy. So we have all these disjointed laws and regulations, and we've had shows on border security. We need better border security. We need all sorts of things that aren't getting done because Congress is deadlocked on this issue, and that we need to move forward. So I think what the president has done is a really good thing. And if you're out there and you don't believe it's a good thing, call me because I'd love to talk to you about it. I think we're going to get some movement, and I think in the end, the president will be vindicated by the fact that Congress will now move. His directive this week would shield 5 million, approximately 5 million people, allowing them to continue to work, but not, just giving them a temporary reprieve from deportation, but it doesn't give them a pathway to citizenship. And that's what we ultimately need to do. We need to come up with a pathway for citizenship, and we need to come up with a comprehensive immigration policy so that we don't have to go to these extremes. But he himself has said, when asked about why he was doing what he was doing and the fact that Congress didn't like what he was doing, he responded by saying, pass a law. You don't like it? Pass a law. And I agree with them. Come on, Congress, pass a law. Let's get together and make something happen so that we have an immigration policy and we don't have to try to do this sort of thing and, do an end run and try to get try to protect people and allow them to work. I mean, I think he said it best when he said, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to make the people that pick our vegetables and work in all sorts of industries in America to keep our country going. We're supposed to make them hide in the shadows and be illegal. This is ridiculous. We need to come up with a comprehensive policy and that protects our country, but recognizes the fact that we are a country of immigrants. I've said this before on the show that I work with Native Americans. And if you're not a Native American, you're an immigrant. You come from immigrant stock. So we need to recognize that. I see we have a caller on line one. Are you there, caller? Hello? Caller? Do we have a caller on line one?
Hello?
Hi, do you have a comment or a question?
Well, about the immigration law or the immigration things that are happening in the world today. I just wonder about what's happening because you have all these people that have followed the process and the protocols as immigrants in the United States in the hopes of obtaining, citizenship and residency in the United States. And now it looks like you're going to go ahead and reward all these people who have not followed any of the process and rules. And I'm just wondering, what kind of message does that send, and how do you reconcile that against the proposals that are out there?
Well, first of all, thank you for calling in, and that's an excellent question. I mean, that is one of the weak spots, I think, in what the president is actually doing. And I think we need to have an immigration policy that addresses this. And again, that's the problem, that we don't have a comprehensive immigration policy. But you're absolutely right. I think if I was one of those people that went about getting citizenship legally, that I'd be upset by this. I think that's a really good point and a really good question. I actually had somebody that worked for me at one time that went back to her home country to become a citizen, and she spent thousands of dollars and brought her whole family back to Sri Lanka with her, and they did get citizenship. They worked through it and did. They actually got it through the lottery. But people like that, I would say, would you know, that this is a problem for them. Yeah, they followed all the rules. They should be fast-tracked somehow, and we should come up with a comprehensive policy that addresses these things. How do you feel? Are you still there, caller? Okay, well, I think we've lost the caller. Anyway, that's how I feel about it. I think you're right. I think that those people should be upset, and that... you know, we need to address the problem of a comprehensive policy in order to get in order to make this happen. Any other callers out there with any feeling about this? Okay, well, I think that. We're not being helped. This situation is not being helped by our friends at the Tea Party, this is my favorite quote, a woman named Jenny Beth Martin, who's president of the Tea Party Patriots, say that we need to stop acting like a banana republic because we're a constitutional republic. You know, I mean, forget the inherent racism that's part of that statement, but are you kidding me? Having the president take action is acting like a banana republic. I really don't see it. But, you know, I think that these guys are willing to say whatever. And I don't think it helps the situation one bit. I think we have to work together to come up with a comprehensive plan, and we're not doing that. So... if you're out there, let me know how you feel. We're going to move on now. I'm sure that this will be an ongoing debate over time about the about immigration policy, and we will have to deal with the part of the policy that doesn't address people that have already gone through the legal process, and we have to develop a pathway to citizenship for those people in the country. One thing I like about this policy is it keeps families together. You know, it allows parents of American citizens to get a new legal status, and it allows over 200,000 people that were born here, brought by their parents illegally, to stay here, which should be the case because they're American citizens. So I like that. So there's some aspects of this that I really like that should be incorporated into that comprehensive plan once we come up with it. Let's move on now, because I'm sure that this will come back and we'll be talking about it for weeks and weeks to come. This is probably going to be the main issue for the lame duck Congress. The last thing I want to talk about is the situation before we leave tonight. It seems that we focus pretty much on race in one form or another on this broadcast tonight. But I want to talk about what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri. You know, the grand jury just recently failed to reach a decision on whether or not to indict Officer Darren Wilson. They need more date, more time to deliberate, which I certainly understand. You want to do the, you know, you want to make the right decision. But I think the situation out there has just been exacerbated by the fact that the governor decided to preemptively send police in there, heavily armed police, to keep order. I don't know why you would do something like that. It seems to me that an action like that only exacerbates an already tense and untenable situation. But I think that we really need, you know, this has been a wake-up call for America that racism is not dead in America. When we elected President Obama, there was this great wave of, you know, a feeling that we'd elected an African American as president, so racism was dead. Well, it's certainly not. And I think that what's gone on in Ferguson lately is just one indication of that. And I think we really need to get to the bottom of what happened to Michael Brown and what action is going to be taken by the government for the police that were involved. And if Officer Wilson is acquitted by a jury of his peers, and or if the grand jury doesn't find enough evidence to indict, I mean, that's certainly our legal process and we should stand by it. But they need to step up to the plate and make a decision. And the governor, I think, has to stop trying to make the situation worse by injecting, you know, an overly aggressive, what appears to be an overly aggressive military presence. Maybe you should take some, maybe you should call up our police chief or the head of the Capitol Police and ask him how to deal with protesters, because we deal with it all the time here in Washington. And it seems to me that we do a much better job at it. We're not as aggressive about it. We understand that people have the right to assemble, petition the government peacefully, and just as they have a right in Ferguson to keep law and order, we also have a right to the people that have grievances also have a right to peacefully assemble and air those grievances. So I'd like to see this situation resolved and resolved quickly so that the people of Ferguson can move on and we can move on as a nation. It's been a tough week for us. Here in Washington, we lost Marion Barry, who was an icon. Nationwide, it seems that we're losing Bill Cosby, who's also another icon. We're miles apart on immigration, which is tearing our country apart, and we need to come up with a solution for it. And we have the situation in Ferguson, which is just an indicator, I think, of kind of the underlying feelings that need to be addressed in America. So it looks like we're running out of time here. We only have a few minutes left. And I thank everybody for joining us today. And I hope you'll come back next week. Kathleen, wherever you are, she's somewhere over somewhere in between Kansas and Arizona right now. But I hope she'll be back next week. And we're going to try to get back on track. We've been lacking guests in recent weeks because, as you know, we've all been tied up in a campaign here, which just ended on November 4th. So we're still getting our sea legs, so to speak, and getting back on the air. But we're going to try to have guests coming up in the next few weeks, every week. We appreciate the callers today. Thank you for calling in. for our three callers. And thanks to everybody who's out there listening to the show. We really appreciate your support. It's important. We feel that this show is important, not only because it gets the word out about the situation in Washington, D.C., but also because it gives a forum for people to speak on issues that we feel are important and that people often don't get to speak on in America. We want to give voice to America on the issues that they care about. We want to create a dialogue because it seems to us that in Washington, nobody's talking to each other. And I think the immigration thing in the president's most recent maneuvers to try to get Congress to move are just an indication of how deadlocked we really are. And we need to come together, America. We need to talk to each other. We need to work out solutions to our problems. This is what we've always done in America. It's what's made our country great. And we hope that our show will play a small part in creating that dialogue and getting things to happen. So on behalf of Kathleen Gomez, who is somewhere drinking, no doubt, drinking a cocktail and eating airline peanuts, and me and the rest of the people of Washington, D.C., thanks, America, for listening. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel. Please continue to listen. Thanks, and have a great Thanksgiving. I forgot, Thanksgiving's coming up. So I'm looking forward to the turkey and the mashed potatoes, all of which I'm not supposed to have, of course. But have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Give the people their right to vote.